Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Welcome to our 17th annual Writers Symposium by the Sea at Point Loma Nazarene University. I'm Dean Nelson on the journalism faculty at the university. And tonight, we have Rachel Held Evans, a very, very interesting blogger, writer, thinker, speaker. She's just, you're really going to like this woman. And part of her legacy has been a very, very interesting memoir called Evolving in Monkey Town. We'll get into that with her in a little bit. And part of her, what's so interesting about her is a book that will be coming out later in 2012 called A Year of Biblical Womanhood. Have I got that right? Okay. And she's a very, very famous person in the blogosphere. So she's with us tonight. So would you welcome Rachel Held Evans? Rachel, you're perhaps best known these days as a blogger, but you started out as a newspaper reporter, right?
I did. Spent a few years in news writing. I come from a really tiny town in Dayton, Tennessee, and for a few years I wrote at the local paper, which was interesting. You report on a lot of city council meetings, you do sports, you do, you know, kitchen features, recipes, you do wear every hat. And I worked for the Chattanooga Times Free Press for a little while, too. So I did the daily thing as well.
So daily newspapering, and then you're into this very, very popular blog. And you aren't doing any kind of print reporting or any of that kind of thing anymore.
Not anymore. Sometimes people publish stuff that I've written for them, but I'm not a reporter.
Okay. So blogging is primarily what you're doing now, right?
It's kind of my bread and butter. Pays the mortgage every month.
Seriously? You're actually making money at your blog?
I do. I sell ads. You can sell products, affiliates. So if somebody buys a book from Amazon via my site, I get a small portion. And one time, and I get anything that people buy after that as well, I get a tiny percentage. So one time somebody bought a big screen TV after they had bought a book off my blog, and so I really raked it in. So if you're shopping online and you're going to buy a book, come through my site and... Oh, yeah. Help a writer out.
I didn't realize you were that shameless in your self-promotion. Now, you wrote this absolutely wonderful book, and I'm old school, so I found out about your book before I found out about your blog, and loved this book, Evolving in Monkey Town, and it's about your kind of progression from... growing up in a fairly narrow-minded kind of a culture and family and this kind of progression into a more maybe some broad-minded thinking. And now this other book that you've got, this Year of Biblical Womanhood, this will be coming out. But you blogged about that first, right? I mean, you did the Biblical Womanhood blog, and now that's going to become a book. That's the order you did this?
On my blog, I wrote about... My blog has followed me throughout the publication of both books and through the process of writing both books. So I wrote about my experience with the year of living biblically, my year of biblical womanhood on the blog in little pieces and tested some ideas out with the readers and to see what they liked and see what caught their interest. I didn't blog every single day about the project. I wrote about it every now and then. So the bulk of the material hasn't been released yet. It's in the book.
Okay. So the Biblical Womanhood Project, though, is you tried to take everything that the Bible, from the Old Testament laws to stuff in the New Testament, you tried to take literally and live it.
All the things the Bible says for women. Mm-hmm. For women. And A.J. Jacobs is I kind of stole this idea from him a little bit. He already wrote about the year living biblically. And I remember reading that book and thinking, oh man, this would be a totally different story if a woman did it. But it didn't really occur to me to do it until you sort of in this evangelical culture that I come from, everybody has been talking about biblical womanhood and how women should ascribe to be biblical women. And
what does that even mean?
Well, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, that's exactly
why I decided to do the project, because to me it didn't make complete sense. What does that mean? Why does everybody have a different opinion about what that means? And aren't we being a little selective when we're talking about biblical womanhood? Because technically speaking, it's biblical for a woman to cover her head when she prays. It's biblical for her to be one of many wives. It's biblical for her to be... there are all kinds of laws that we don't observe anymore and that we are very selective in applying. And so I just thought it would be interesting to take this whole idea for a run and see how realistic it is to expect women to live up to biblical womanhood.
And this included, I assume, being submissive to your husband?
Yes, it did. And that was a little weird. I had to call him master for a week, which was interesting. I have 1 Peter 3:4 to thank for that one. It says, wives, submit to your husband as Sarah submitted to Abraham and called him master. So for 1 week, I called Dan master.
So give me an example of how a normal conversation would go where you were calling him master.
He would say, I would say, well, where do you want to go eat dinner, master?
And he Seriously? Would
say, yeah. And he would say, I want to go here. And then, well, I was telling
well,
him.
Well, wait a second. Hold on. Why weren't you cooking him dinner?
That was not very biblical, right?
You can't be that selective, Rachel. I'm sorry.
I'm being selective. Yeah, I made a lot of dinners too. Or, he'd lose something like, hon, have you seen the car keys? And I'd be like, well, where the heck did you leave them last, master? You know? So we had some fun with it. I'm glad it only lasted a week because I couldn't have continued that one all year. There were some other crazy fun things I get to do. For instance, Proverbs 31:23 says, a virtuous woman's husband is praised at the city gate. So I made a sign that said, Dan is awesome. And I stood outside the Dayton city gate limit sign with a sign that says Dan
that just
is
says
awesome.
Dan is awesome. I've seen this photo on your blog. You're standing outside the Welcome to Dayton, Tennessee sign with this big...
Dan is awesome. Yeah, I think people thought I'd lost a bet. It was fun. It's one of the more fun things.
All right, so you did this for a solid year. This is going to come out in a book form, but I'm just wondering about what are some of the things that you did that you thought, actually, that's kind of still worth doing. I'm guessing there are a few things that you were
certainly.
Glad to be rid of.
Oh, most of it, yeah. I certainly don't recommend that any other woman try this. Part of the point of doing this was to show that none of us are actually practicing biblical womanhood and that we need to be more careful with how we treat the word biblical. That this, we kind of throw that around and stick it in front of other loaded words to try and bolster our position on something, and that's not only disrespectful to women, it's also disrespectful to the Bible. I don't think it's meant to be read that way and reduced to this adjective. But there were some things that I enjoyed and that I plan to carry over. For instance, every month I focused on a different virtue so that I wouldn't have to do everything all year. And also, just to give the book some
structure. That'd just be asking too much, wouldn't it?
Some things I did all year. I covered my head when I prayed all year, and I had like 10 commandments that I followed all year. But most everything else fell into these different virtues, basically. And one month I focused on silence, and I wanted to look at sort of both sides of silence, the way that women have been silenced in church history and the way Scripture has been used to silence women, which is sort of the negative aspect of silence. But I also wanted to look at the positive side of silence, because it's one thing to be silenced, quite another to silence yourself before God. And so I spent 3 days in a Benedictine monastery, which for an introvert like me is like Six Flags. I was so happy, had a wonderful time. I'm going to go back. And just and there were a few little things like that I got to do where I was focusing on the contemplative life, contemplative spirituality, prayer, Lectio Divina, that I really connected with and really enjoyed. And I've carried that over. And there are a few other things that I enjoyed during the year and have tried to continue to implement in my life. And at the end of the year, I came up with 10 resolutions because the end of the year felt perfectly with Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. And I thought, what a great time to make some resolutions. So that began the year with 10 commandments. You know, cover your head when you pray, submit to your husband, grow out your hair. And I ended the year with 10 resolutions, 10 things I wanted to keep from the year.
And that the contemplative side was one of
yes,
them?
Yes, to nurture the contemplative impulse that I have. And, you know, that's been something that women in church history have excelled at. Teresa of Avila and some of my favorite mystics are women. And in times and cultures when women were typically silenced and had very little voice, because these women were able to silence themselves before God, they gained a platform, gained a voice where they might not otherwise have it. Julian of Norwich, some of my favorite women throughout church history, were great contemplatives. And it was great to connect with that.
What are some of the practices that you're glad to be done with?
Most of them. You know, I tried to focus on honing my domestic skills, and I tried to learn how to sew, and it was a complete and utter disaster.
So, that's right. You tried to sew your own clothes and,
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, I had to make it because I was turning Proverbs 31, which this should never be done, by the way. Don't turn Proverbs 31 into a to-do list. That's not what it's meant to be. We tend to try to do that with it. But I tried to learn to make my own clothes because it says a virtuous woman, it clothes herself in purple. So I made this. I say I made it. I was getting to the end of my rope because I had all these sewing projects to complete and I was really struggling. So I just invited a bunch of ladies from the church over, like Betty, and to come help me finish all these projects. And I just delegated it all. And by the end of the day, they were all done. And my husband was so impressed. He comes through the front door and I have all of these sewing projects done. And I said, "Do you think I cheated?" And he said, "I didn't marry a woman who could sew. I married a woman who could get stuff done."
So, there you go.
Yeah, he's a good man.
There you go.
So, and it doesn't matter because the Proverbs 31 woman had servant girls. It says she provides food for her servants. So I figured, sure, my friends are just my servants for the day. If I make them food, they'll make my clothes for me.
Very.
And I'll take the credit.
Very biblical. That's awesome.
Very biblical.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about blogging as a medium. For you, blogging has become more important than maybe writing books.
Yeah, it's given me a platform where I might not otherwise have one. You know, the first book did fine, but it didn't do great. But I get invited to things like this because of my blog. When publishers are looking at picking up books, they want to know how many followers you have, how many Twitter followers, how many Facebook fans, how many people subscribe to your blog, because that's sort of the future. And I have this, for whatever reason, it turns out I'm pretty good at blogging, and I have this great platform that gives me an opportunity to speak where I might not otherwise have that opportunity.
So how is it different? How is blogging different from any other kind of writing?
Oh, goodness. In a lot of ways. I mean, you have to be, I try to put content up every single day, which is a pretty rigorous writing schedule. You don't have as much time to really think through what you're going to say. And it's its own style. You know, you have to get people's attention quickly. You have to say something in a relatively short amount of space because people's attention span is just, you know, not as great on the internet. And so it's its own style of writing. And I kind of click into a different mode when I'm writing for the blog than when I'm writing for books. But, yeah, you just have to. And it's also, you have to be in conversation with what's the buzz in your particular world and your little blogosphere world. So I tend to interact with people who are, you know, evangelical Christians is sort of where I came from and where I interact with those folks a lot. And so whatever they're talking about, I try to weigh in. This is a matter with blogging. It's a matter of jumping into the conversation that's already happening and then finding a way to be a strong voice in that conversation and building a reputation around that. So you have to be on your toes. You have to be paying attention to what's going on. You have to be up to date with what people are talking about. You have to be ready to respond to controversy quickly and wisely. It's its own little game, and it's kind of fun to play. I enjoy it a lot.
Since you mentioned controversy, you've gotten into kind of a public thing with some evangelical Christian leaders, and I'm just curious as to what your take on all of that is now. I mean, some of these folks who call for a more muscular kind of faith and more masculine, and you've weighed in and said, "No, wait just a second." How's that worked out for you?
You know, it's interesting because there's a troubling trend, and this is one of the reasons why I wanted to write this book about biblical womanhood, is because there's a real troubling trend in evangelicalism that holds that all men must be this way and all men must be that way, or women must be this way. And they sort of throw the word biblical in front of it to justify these very narrow gender roles, gender stereotypes. And it's very troubling, and it's a very popular movement. People don't always realize how popular it is. And it's always sort of bothered me, and I've always been blogging about it. But when, as soon as a woman starts criticizing patriarchy, you know, starts criticizing the misogyny she sees, you're typically labeled an angry feminist. It just comes with the territory. And that's hard for me because I don't really feel angry. I feel concerned, and I want to speak up for the women who maybe don't have a voice in this. But it can be, sometimes it's hard to feel like I have to carry that label around when all I'm trying to do is speak up about something that I see as problematic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I hate to be boxed in as the controversial girl, the girl who's picking on Mark Driscoll or John Piper. But at the same time, somebody has to speak up when women are being mistreated and when people are bullying.
Yeah. You know, I think this goes back to, I don't remember how old you were when you saw on a television account of a woman in Afghanistan being killed. And something snapped in you.
That was the first time I really questioned the faith I had been brought up with. Because this was right after the U.S. invaded Afghanistan. And, you know, that's when all of a sudden people started talking about the women of Afghanistan who had been there many years before that. But, you know how that goes. So to justify sort of what we were doing there. And, they had this documentary called Behind the Veil. And it was featuring women in Afghanistan, and it was sort of an undercover documentary. And they had this scene where they drug this woman, and she was in, you know, the full burqa, out to a soccer stadium pitch and executed her. And I saw that video when I was a junior in college in the dorm room. We were watching in the dorm lobby. And when I saw that, I realized in that moment that everything I'd been taught growing up assured me that that woman would spend eternity in hell. And I just couldn't accept that. I just couldn't anymore. And at that moment, I just started deconstructing and rethinking everything I'd been taught growing up about my faith, about heaven and hell, about Christ. And it was a difficult time of doubt. It was a dark time of doubt for me. But it started a process of evolution that's made me the Christian I am today, the follower of Christ I am today, which is a little less certain about everything, but a lot more faith-filled.
As I recall, you had trouble, you were asked to give your college commencement talk, and you had been raised in all of this certainty, and you just had trouble coming up with, what am I going to say? Now that I'm not so certain about things anymore.
Yeah, I sort of faked it for the 2 years after I saw that. I was a junior, and I was kind of a big deal. And I was kind of a big leader. You know, I was in student government, and I was sort of in front of everybody doing my thing. I was super Christian. You know, when I was a kid, I won the Best Christian Attitude Award. They actually had this award at my private school. And I was, like, really competitive in trying to win it, you know. Anyway.
Wait a second. You competed to win the Best Christian Attitude?
I won it 3 years in a row. I wanted it for a fourth.
That's awesome.
You don't do that by, like, being lazy on the job, man, you know? So I was, like, super Christian. I had this reputation for being this great Christian girl. And, you know, and so I wanted to keep that up, even though inside I wasn't even sure I believed in God anymore. And I remember I was asked to give the commencement address at my college, which was a huge honor. And just, I remember being up there saying things I didn't entirely believe. And sometimes that still happens because, you know, I speak and I don't have, and not every day is faith filled for me. I have difficult days of doubt still. And sometimes I'm speaking and I'm saying things that I believe in my head, but sometimes it's hard, you know, to believe it deep down. So for a long time, I just pretended that I had it all together. And finally, through the blog and the book, I sort of told the truth and said, you know, I have these doubts. I have these questions. I'm not sure about this. And it's been wonderful because apparently there's a lot of other people who have those same questions and doubts. And finding those people has been so encouraging and enriching. And finding them here has been a blessing.
I want to go back to blogging for a second.
Okay.
There are a lot of people I know who are bloggers who are sort of obsessive compulsive about their blog.
Their stats.
Yeah, they're constantly checking their stats and saying, how popular am I now? And are you one of those people?
Yes. There's this new thing.
That's not being a woman of valor. I'm sorry.
It's so bad. There's this new feature called real-time Google Analytics. You know,
you don't go there.
Yes, I can see how many people are on my site every single second, where they're coming from. Yeah, it's really unhealthy.
You know,
it's,
yeah, that's just sick.
It is. And, you know,
What if the numbers plummet?
Oh, well, my self-esteem goes right down with it. And it's awful. This is why I need Benedictine monasteries to get away to every now and then, because it will make you crazy. And sometimes my husband's like, Rachel, you might want to put the stats away for a while. And I say, yes, master, and everything's fine. But yeah, I keep track of it, and I know when I start to get obsessed that I need to. But it's a temptation, because you see your numbers go up, and you're like, yeah, I'm rocking the blog world. And then they start to go down a little bit, and you're like, oh, what's going on? And then it starts to just plummet, and you think, I'm a terrible person. I'm not worth anything. But that's why you need to step away from the blog every now and
then. Which you did for a while,
yeah.
Right?
Every now and then I'll just say, I'm done for a week. I just can't. Because it's really easy to get caught up in it, and because it's so day-to-day. It's not like other writing where you have time to simmer, think about it, revamp it, edit it, you know, just, you know, really let it simmer. You have to get it out every day. It's very, it rewards the most reactive, loudest voices, and to not lose yourself in that, it can be a challenge. It really can. And there are days when I question whether it's good for my soul. Which is, you know, why I head to the Benedictine Monastery.
Wouldn't the world be a better place if more people let things simmer and edit?
Yeah. And that's the thing, but that the blogosphere doesn't reward that. You get rewarded if you're the first to respond, or if you have the best response, basically the most out of the box response to any given news item or whatever. And so for me, I have to avoid the temptation of always trying to be the first to respond, because that's just not good for my soul, you know. We're supposed to be slow to react, slow to speak, slow to anger,
right,
quick to listen. And that's most bloggers, you know, that's not going to make you a successful blogger. Well, not, you know, I don't know if that's true, though. I mean, because I think the big controversial posts that get you those big numbers, those big jumps, they will just come and go unless you build a faithful following of readers. And that faithful following takes a different sort of dedication and a different sort of writing and a more consistent, thoughtful approach to keep the readers there. So, it's a constant. I constantly have to be thinking about, what is this doing to my soul? How am I balancing my life? Am I being too reactive? Do I need to take a step away? I think you could probably be more successful if you didn't ask those questions, but success isn't the most important thing. I want to be able to do this in a way that I can be me, and in a way that I don't get too carried away by it, which can really easily happen online.
You wrote a blog post called Blessed Are the Uncool that just went viral.
You probably got it on Facebook.
Yeah,
where it really blew up.
I got it from several people, and I'm just wondering, what was it about that blog post that you think so resonated with the world?
I think the posts that really take off like that are when I've said something that a lot of people have been feeling, but they weren't really sure how to articulate. And I think what that post was about was, I was saying that even though I'm young and people think I want a big, cool show in church, that what I really want is just an authentic community of people where Jesus and his friends who were uncool would fit in. Because there's sort of this assumption that, oh, you're young, you're 30 or under, you must want like fog machines in church. And like, if we do that, then the young people
Lighters.
Will come. Yeah, and if we just add a rock band and do a light show, then the young will come. And that's not really actually what I want. I don't have a problem with those things. But so I wrote about how what I really want is a church that would welcome uncool people. And I was also writing a bit in response to, there was a big mega church, I think it's out west here, where there was a special needs child in the audience who they felt was being a distraction to the musical performance, and so they escorted the special needs kid out. And I use that as sort of the starting point for this story of, have we lost our way when the special needs child is considered the distraction? Maybe the worship was the distraction. And that one hit a nerve, and it really blew up. Because I think a lot of people felt the same way. Like, wait, we've got our priorities wrong when a special needs kid is escorted out of a church. Or into a, they put him, you know, in a special holding room, I guess, or some place away from the performance. That something has gone wrong, and that's not really what we want. And it just resonated with a lot of people, and it got shared. It's still, to this day, the most popular post I've ever written.
All right, so we've got a lot of people who will be watching this who want to be writers. We've got a lot of people in the audience who are writers, want to be writers. Give us your best advice.
Oh my goodness!
For writing well,
work hard.
Oh come on, come on! There are a lot of people who work hard who still suck.
Work hard and don't suck.
There's good advice.
And read everything you can get your hand on, hands-on read. Don't just read in your own genre. I think that's important. Practice other genres. Write poetry if you're a newspaper writer. Write news writing if you're a poet, just because I think that expands your capacity to be better in your own particular genre if you just have that crossover experience. And just read everything. Read the newspaper, read books, read the back of the cereal box, just read. And it slowly seeps in, I think. Read people who are great writers and make notes of what they do right. I'm pretty deliberate about it. I went through all of my favorite spiritual memoirs before I wrote Evolving in Monkey Town and took notes on what they all did that I thought they did right.
And like who? Give us some names.
Donald Miller and Anne Lamott, Sarah Miles, Ian Cron, and I wrote down what I thought they were doing right, and there were certain themes that came up over and over again. All of them are great at having a self-depreciating sense of humor, and that'll come out right at the beginning of their books, and you immediately like people who can laugh at themselves. And so I was like, I got to be sure to remember to do that. So I'm very meticulous about keeping notes. When I see something that I like, I try to figure out, why do I like this sentence? What about this sentence makes me happy? Or, what about this metaphor resonates so much? And I keep a journal of all of that. So when you read something you like, write it down. Figure out why. Figure out how it works.
All right. Anything else?
Work hard, don't suck.
Yeah. That's going to be my mantra. Rachel Held Evans, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, guys.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.